From Perek Tes, Pasuk Tes Vav. Okay, in honor of Tu B'Shvat, we'll start with Pasuk Tes Vav. Perek Tes, Pasuk Tes Vav. Perek Tes Vav, in honor of Tu B'Shvat. Vayikwalu hayudim asher b'shishon gam b'yom ha'arbosa l'chodesh tov ayigub b'shishon shlosh me'os ish v'abizah lo sholchu es yodam. So Esther was given, they were given permission to assemble. Vayikalu simply means, the Medrash actually says here in this pasuk, it means there was a Yom Tainis and a Yom Tefillah. Just like there was a Yom Tainis and Yom Tefillah on the 13th, they extended the fast and the call to gather and assemble for Tefillah on the 14th day, because they're going to take revenge against their enemies on the 14th day as well. Okay, we mentioned last week, we discussed this in detail, is that what exactly did the king give them permit? Well, the Targum said that the day of the 14th, what was this day? Was this day a day designated as a holiday, a public holiday, or was day 14 designated as a second day of war? The Targum presented two different opinions, and we took note that in this, if we would follow along with the first interpretation, that it was a day designated as a holiday, then there was no permission for a Jewish fellow to kill any enemy, a non-Jew. And that would explain why it says Hayehudim, it's spelled Hayehudim. It's spelled with two yuds, alluding to individuals. They were vigilantes. Vigilantes went out on the street and took the law into their own hands. Whereas on day 13 when they fought, they did not. They fought as a nation, as a group, not as an individual. Now it's important to take note. And we mentioned last week that this is the makar of Shushan Purim. Purim is a very unique holiday in that it's not celebrated on the same day in all parts of the world. If you live in a city that had a wall, Mimos Yeshua Ben Nun, or you live in Shushan, or any city that had a wall in Mimos Yeshua, Shushan did not necessarily have a wall in Mimos Yeshua Ben Nun. It could be that Shushan was the only exception. We do not know if Shushan Habira had a wall from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. We assume it did not. But since the miracle took place in Shushan, the holiday was celebrated on day 15, as we're going to see, when they rested from their enemies. What's important to take note is, see, we are a little bit misled, that when we celebrate Purim, we think about an Eretz Yisrael, they celebrate one day later, it's not that in Eretz Yisrael they only celebrate the holiday on day 15, because they celebrate the holiday on day 13 as well, because there was a 2-day war in Shushan. We get the impression when we celebrate Hayom Purim is that there's a holiday for Bnei Chutz Liaretz and there's a holiday for Shushan Gam. Because it was really a two-day war. So they fought on day 13 and on day 14, according to the second interpretation of the Targum. Now, v'abizah lo sholchu es yodam. I saw a very interesting interpretation here in the Mishpatzah Zav. He explains why, we discussed last week, why didn't they take from the spoils of their enemy? So he says as follows. He says, we gave a whole number of interpretations last week. We discussed the reason, because they wanted to be misaking the chait of Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech was explicitly instructed by Shmuel not to benefit from the spoils of Agag and Amalek. We discussed the halachic issue that at the time of Mashiach comes, when there will be a Muhammad against Amalek, will we be permitted to enjoy, to take the spoils? According to some of the Rishonim, the Melchemes Amalek, we are not allowed to enjoy the spoils of Amalek, because it says, Mocho emches zecher Amalek, anything that would serve as a reminder that Amalek once upon a time existed must be removed from this world. So if you're going to take a hammer, you're going to destroy, kill an Amaleki, and take his hammer, take his laptop, take his smartphone. So you'll be walking around, I don't know how long, you know, smartphones have a very short shelf life today. I know every 6 months already one's running to get a new smartphone, but you'll have a hammer, right? So you'll have a hammer, you'll remember, oh, this is the hammer of the Amaleki. That's forbidden because it says in the pasuk, you're not allowed to have in your possession any object which would serve as a reminder of that this that there is such a nation called Amalek. So therefore, according to halacha, they were not allowed. They viewed this as a religious war. They did not just view this as a time to take to silence their enemies. This was a melchames mitzvah. This was a team of lechias Amalek, and lechias Amalek, you're not allowed to derive benefit from the assets of the Amalekim. Or maybe it was a practice run for the ultimate time of Mashiach to get used to such a thing of going to war. You're not going to derive benefit. Even though they were allowed to take possession of their assets. I saw something a little bit different. Something a little bit different is that we know that when you kill a person, when a person is executed, it's not so simple. Let's look at Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was one of the first people we find that took the law into his own hand, and he killed a Mitzri. It says in the past, before Moshe, he went out to the field and he saw Vayar ish Mitzri, make ish ivri me echav. Before Moshe Rabbeinu killed the ish Mitzri with the Shem HaMefarish, it says Vayar ki ein ish, which means, according to Chazal, al pi ruach hakodesh, he saw all the future descendants that would come from this person had he remained alive. And looked al pi ruach hakodesh, how would a tzaddik, would something good come from this person? And Moshe came to the conclusion that nothing good throughout the entire world history, nothing good would ever come from this ish Mitzri, and therefore, and only then, vayar ki einish, nothing would come. Vayach es haMitzri, he killed the Mitzri. So here as well. So here, when Klal Yisrael given permission to just kill anyone that they want. It's not so simple. If you kill a person, there's a person next door neighbor, he's a wicked person, he gives you tzaras. You don't know, maybe in 200 years from now, he'll have a child, a great grandson, that will be the biggest Ohev Yisrael, will stand up to the entire world, and will be admitted into the Yad Vashem, the Tzadikei Umos HaOlam. So, is it really so simple for a person to go and just take the law into his own hands and kill a person? Do you really, can anyone today say Vayar ki einish, Vayach, if a person commits a crime, he does actually Schayiv Misa, he does a crime, then the halach is you have to kill him, you don't have a choice. You have a guy and the guy has blood on his hands, you have to kill the guy, there's nothing to talk about. But if you have a guy you just don't like, and today, on this day, on the 14th day, on the 13th day of Adar, the king gives permission to do whatever you want. The people are causing you harm. You just kill them. Really? You're just going to kill them because you don't like them? Because they were nasty to you? And they participated in some evil decree?
Of course, like that, in Israel, when the terrorists are running away, are you allowed to kill them?
Okay, so today it's much more complicated because today the whole world is watching and there are laws and there's this and there's that and there's this anti-Semitism. It's a whole different environment. But talk about here, try to put yourself in the shoes of the people living at this time. The king says, I'm giving you one day, do whatever you want. Anyone that you don't like, that's giving you a hard time, just kill him. It's okay, it's on me. And no one's going to ask any questions. So it goes without saying, if people have blood on their hands, there's nothing to talk about. They're gone. They're finished. But if you have people that are just troublemakers, and they're evil, and it does not reach the level where they have blood on their hands, is it really the right thing to kill them? You don't know what's going to come from them. Maybe one day they'll become gerim. Maybe their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, maybe they'll be tzaddikim. You don't know what's going to be. So the Mefarshim say something very valid. It says, therefore, people still said, you make the decision. Every person in Klal Yisrael was able, listen, you know the person, you know their personality, you know their nature. If in your eyes, this is a wicked, wicked person, every once in a while you come in contact with people that are like, they're just wicked. They just have that ruach of rishus. Then make the decision. Go right ahead and put an end to them. And don't worry about the future. You're not chayiv to, you only have an obligation to do that much. If you don't have ruach hakodesh, you can make an educated assumption of what you feel is the right thing to do. But here's the catch. But if in the back of your mind you know that when you kill this person, you get to keep all of their money, then you're blinded. you're blinded, you cannot make that educated decision. You have a next door neighbor. There hasn't been one Shabbos where he hasn't given you a hard time. Every time you see him in the street, he's giving you a hard time. He's a wicked person. He's a wicked person. Does he have blood on his hands? No. Is it a tzara to see this person? Yes. You have permission today to kill him. Should you really kill him? Maybe, yeah, maybe not. That's your decision. But if in the back of your mind you know that after you kill him, you get to keep the house, and then you can expand, you can have a double lot, and you'll have two driveways, and you can inherit a snowblower, and all of the other things that come along with removing him from this world, you're not thinking right. You're not in a.
That's what happened with the Nazis and the Jews. They were going to kill them and take all their property. That's what happened.
That's the incentive. That was the incentive.
The average person, not the people, but the average person. Oh, if I kill him,
That was okay. In the Hanani,
take over his land.
So therefore, Chazal was very clever. Mordechai was very clever, and he said, even though the law allows you to take their assets, you know something? Who says killing a guy is so good? You know what's going to be? You know what's going to be down the line? 100 years, 200 years, 300 years, 1,000 years? You know what's going to come from them? Be very careful. You make do the best you can. Make an educated decision. But don't be blinded by money. And therefore, if you know in advance you're not going to get one penny for killing this guy, it's a different hashkaf, a different decision if you will come to kill the person.
I wanted to say that the same thing with Mitzrayim. When God brought the Makas on the Mitzrayim, they didn't ask for it, so to speak, directly. So God punished them. But all the Mitzrayim, besides the Sheish Me'os Rechev Bachur and all the people that went, the Abarbanel points out that they didn't look where they were. They went into the Yam. He says they were so blinded by their hatred, they just didn't look around where they were. And they just ended up in the Yam. So they wouldn't have gone had they known where they were. But they were, their hatred blinded So the point is, I wanted to add to that, which he doesn't say, is that unfortunately for them, here they made a decision to come and try to kill all the Jews. Nobody asked them to come. They could have stayed in Mitzrayim. But now God is telling you, you could have stayed in Mitzrayim. Now you showed your hand that you deserve to die. And God wanted the Jews to see that nobody asked them to come. They came of their own volition now to come and kill the Jews. Just understand this is what a Mitzray is till the very end.
Okay, that's right. In a Hanami. Let's see the Targum. I think we probably did it, but let's just review the Targum of Pasuk Tezvav anyway to review what it says here. The short Targum: the Iskanshu Yehudoin, the Jews they gathered di v'shushan uf also biyoma arba asaliyerch adar uketalu b'shushan, they killed b'shushan tlos meos ish guvern 300 men midbeis amolek uva adolo oishitu yos yedehon 300 men. What is the significance of the number 300? So first of all, the number 300 generally means it's like the last letter in the Aleph Beis. Now you'll say, what are you talking about? Tav is the last letter of the Aleph Beis, not Shin. So Tav, according to some of the Mefarshim, I don't have all the sources here, I don't know, but is not really the last letter. It's like a package. You know, you get to the end of the Aleph Beis, Shin is the last letter. It represents the most. You have many different Mamorei Chazal that talk about, when they give different exaggerations of how much assets a person had, they say it's 300. 300,000 this, 300 this, 300 that. I don't know the examples, but 300 is a number that represents the max. Tov, the next, is more of like of a packaging of the Aleph Beis. Like it's the Gemar. It doesn't necessarily symbolize the most. If you want to use a letter in the Aleph Beis to represent the most possible, we've reached the max. Occasionally, the Gemara uses the letter Shin. Sometimes the Gemara does use the letter. If I'm not mistaken, I think sometimes when you're referring to Gashmias, I think the rule is, I think it's a very good rule which works out most of the time. Unfortunately, I don't have examples, but when you want to refer to the max in Gashmias, you tell a person he has the most amount of cars, right? How many cars does he have in his driveway? How many cell phones? He has 300. When you want to talk about how much land, how much wealth, $300 million, $300 billion. when you want the God, when you want to make ruchnius, then you use them to connote the most. You use the letter tof. Avram Avinu's mesechta avodah zara had how many parakim? 400 parakim. Why 400? Because Torah, his mesechta. The Masechta, in his Masechta, which he taught the world Yadus. So his Masechta, so Ruchnius, you use the number 400. So here we're talking about killing the Amalekim, we're talking about killing bodies. We're not talking, it's maybe it's also, we're talking about killing people, the Gashmias. It could be also, it hints to the fact that the war was incomplete. In other words, we're trying over here to wipe out Amalek, but Amalek, if you want to talk about Amalek, it's a religious war. So when it's a religious war, what number would be more appropriate? The number 400. So if you would say they killed 400 people, it would have a connotation, they killed out every last zecher of the nation that denies the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it doesn't say that. It says 300. Because 300 is a number which is symbolic of Gashmias. They had relief from their enemies at the time, at the moment. But the enemy, unfortunately, lived on to fight another day. The spiritual Muhammad continues. This is like a morale type of thing. Did you ever hear of this? The difference between 300 and 400? Okay, but that is also by Binyamin, it says... The number, I actually forgot the name, but Yamin, it says that it was also the number 300. We know there's a lot of symbolism in Yosef HaTzadik. He gave Binyamin 5 changes of clothing, similos, to be merames on the 5 garments, and Mordechai was Yosef Lufnei HaMelech. And it says there also something about the number 300. He gave him, let me see if I can quickly look it up. Oh, so it says? Okay, so that's what it is. So it says that he gave Binyamin 300 coins of silver. Why did he give him 300 coins of silver? The Medrash says to be merames at his descendants, and Mordechai, through Mordechai's leadership, they would wipe out the 300 men in Shushan HaBira. Shushan HaBira, the Shushan Purim, was a miracle where 300 people were put out of their misery. Okay, so the two go together. So that's also another remnant to the significance of the number 300. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk. Ushaor pasuk tes zayin. Ushaor hayudim asher b'midos hamelach, and the other Jews that were in b'midos hamelach nekalu v'amod al nafsham. They defended their neshamos v'noach me'oyevehem. They rested from their enemies v'horog b'so ne'ehem chamisha v'shivim olef, 75,000 people. And again, this goes back to what took place on day 13. Uva'bizolo sholchu es yodam. Now, there is a diak in this pasuk, but diak is, why does it say the word v'noach me oyevehem before v'harog b'so ne'ehem? Seemingly, if we were writing the pasuk, we would put it in the reverse order. We would write, they defended amod al nafsham, they defended their neshamos, v'harog b'so ne'ehem, they killed their enemy, and then they had rest. So the Mefarshim tell us that it completely changes the meaning of the word v'noach. If the word v'noach would come after v'harog, then noach would mean they celebrated, right? They killed their enemy. Oh, we have rest, we have menucha, and now we have rest, we have menucha. It would have a connotation of a celebration almost. But it doesn't say that. It says first v'noach me'oyveihem, there was first rest, and then they went out to kill. The answer is, it alludes to what it says in Parshas Kiseitse, V'hoyo b'honiach Hashem Elokecha mikol oyvecha misaviv, then timcha zecher Amalek. Why does the pasuk in Parshas Kiseitse say V'hoyo b'honiach? It's coming to teach us that the Mulcham of Amalek, don't make a mistake and think the Mulcham of Amalek is a practical war. We've got problems. We have enemies, they're bothering us, they're starting up with us, they're stealing from us, they're throwing missiles on our settlements, we want more land. No, that's not what the Milchemes HaMolek is about. Milchemes HaMolek is only after you're at a state of peace. It's a very, very frightening interpretation, but this is what it says in Farshim. You'll come to a point where no one's bothering you. You're living in a world, can you imagine such a thing? It's very hard to understand this. You're living in a world, and you're at peace. You're living in Eretz Yisrael, and v'noach. You're living in a state of peace. No one is bothering you. But there exists in the world, and this is times of Mashiach, this is not our day and age, to say such things is a little bit extreme. You're at peace, no one's bothering you, but in the world there is a koyach of ra. There is a koyach of ra that lurks out there somewhere in the world. Who knows where they are? They're not on your border, they're not coming to bother you, they're far, far away. If there exists evil in this world, it's a disease. Maybe now it's not affecting us. Maybe it's not going to affect us for 100 years, 200 years. But as long as that monster is out there, as long as that disease is out there, there is a nation in the world that denies the existence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, denies the Hashgacha Pratis. There's a mitzvah on Klal Yisrael to go out and to preemptively engage this enemy and to take them out. So therefore it's V'hoya B'honiach Hashem Elokecha Mikol Oyvecha Misaviv. Hashem will give you rest from all your enemies. You're living in a state of peace in Eretz Yisrael. You would think, that's it, so don't bother me, I won't bother you. Isn't that the attitude we live today? Halavai, we should have that today. Halavai. That's all we need today. Just leave us alone. Do what you want, we'll do what we want, don't bother us. That's true. That's a true and a very good attitude until Mashiach comes. After Mashiach comes, it becomes time for Tikkun Olam. The whole Al-Kayn, the Kavaluch, Hashem, Lewis, Mer, Besifer, Zachar, Lahavir, Gilulim, Min, Aretz, Valilim, Karosi, Kareson. This is not when they're coming to fight us. We have to go out. Go out and it's like, you know, when a doctor, if a person has a disease, even though the disease right now, it's silent. It's not, what's the expression? It's dormant. If it's there, it's there. It'll be passed down to the next generation. And the time's going to come where it's going to be a problem. It's going to be trouble. Mm-hmm. You have to go and be oikarit. And that's the deeper meaning of verse Behoniach. When you know you're Behoniach, now you're ready to go into the level of Timcha Zecher Amolek. It's a purely religious war. Here is the Klal Yisrael on a token level fulfill that Madrega. It says here they Omod Al Nafsham. They defended themselves. V'noyach me oyevehem, and they're done. No one was bothering Klal Yisrael on the 13th day of Adar. They were at a state of peace. They can sit back, go to Koilel. They can learn. Everything is fine. We'll mind our business. You mind your business. No, Mordechai said. This was a token tkufa of Mashiach. Maybe this is the time. Seize the moment. There was noyach. And now engage the enemy. It's a melchemes mitzvah. The horoig bison ehem chamisha v'shivim aleph. And uvabi zeloy shalach v'syadam. Because the melchemes amolek, you don't take the spoils. And the targum, as we said, it says the amolekim. It doesn't just say the enemies. The targum, the previous pasuk is made very, very clear. Mid the base amolek. This wasn't just stam an enemy. Just stam a person who says something nasty to Klal Yisrael. This was amolek. This is a melchemes mitzvah. We're dealing over here at the tekufa when Mordechai believed that he can bring Mashiach. And every generation is a person that is roi to be Mashiach. If Klal Yisrael will only want, if the conditions are right, this can be Mashiach, and the bayis that would have then been built would have been the ultimate, the Shechina would have been restored, would have been the bayis Shlishi, and there never would have been Galus again. Unfortunately, there are hints here in the Psukim, we didn't make it all the way. The last three prokim of the Megillah is a disappointment. In between the lines, it's a letdown. There was a climax when he came to Perek Zayin. This could have been the moment of Mashiach. This could have been, and then the next three psukim basically review the events in a different light and show it was so close. We just let it slip by. It's like a bittersweet holiday Purim. Purim is a lost opportunity. It's not a holiday of pure simcha. Daniel was murdered. We don't even begin to imagine what that meant for Klal Yisrael, to him, to Daniel, to lose his life. Mashiach was mamish there. It was there in the tip of our fingers, and we let it slip by. Opportunities like this don't come around that often. Okay, let's go further. So we discussed an oyin or sone generally is a person that has a sin in the heart.
Okay, and so then it makes then you if chat is very
okay.
Once the oyvim saw that the oymed al nafsham, so it's like a war. They knew they lost. They put the weapons down, and we give up.
We give up. We raise the white flag.
But the guys in the hearts, putting the weapons or any agreement is worthless. You gotta cut them off.
Exactly. Very good. Okay, that's another mahalach. A mahalach derech pshat. He's saying right.
I mean, if the kids are coming, terrorists are coming.
If you know who your enemy is, it's better.
The guys behind him who are setting him up.
So what you're saying over here is he's saying something very deep. He's saying that the known enemies they let live. Because the known enemies were blacklisted.
They knew already.
They're on a no-fly zone. On a no-fly list, right? The known enemies. They're not going to cause any harm. They're on a no-fly list. They're not getting visas. They're not getting a passport. So therefore, you can live. We're not going to kill you. You can live. Do whatever you want. But the Soine, he's the real danger. Because he's not on a no-fly list. He can do whatever he wants. But we know. We know what's in his heart. So the only solution for these people is to cut him off. The heroic. A different mahalach al derech pshat. Very good. All right, so now let's see over the Targum and Pasuk Tezayin. Ushar Yehudo in di bifilchei de malka. Iskinoshu, they gathered. The kaimu yosna. Now we're going backwards. This is the portion point. That's a very bizarre thing. We're going backwards. We're first talking about what they did in Shush, and then we're going backwards and tell us what they did in Bashar Hamedinos. This seemingly did not take place. This did not take place on the 15th, on the 14th day. This seemingly took place on the 13th day, unless you want to say a Jewish. And once they were renegades, like the first interpretation of the Targum is that the 14th day was never meant to be a day of war for the people in Shushan. It was meant to be a day of celebration.
That's what the Megillah. The Sturm says that, you know, they just, as they said, listen, we need another day, we didn't finish the job.
Yeah, but that was only for Shushan. You only gave them a permission in Shushan. But it says, Ushaor HaYehudim.
They were looking to, they just didn't finish their job in Shushan. They were doing
in Shushan.
They didn't finish the job.
But look what it says. It says, Ushaor HaYehudim B'medinos HaMelech. So it's, what do you mean? But why the Pesukim is bizarre? It's out of order.
It's only out of chronological order, but logically, Shushan is the center of all of the action. So we need the follow through of what happens in Shushan, and then.
But that's not the Pashtun Pshat. I don't know, most of the Pashtunim wouldn't say that. Most of the Pashtunim say that this Pasuk is to be understood. That it happened before. We're going backwards. We're going back in time. We're telling you what they did. We were giving you the tally of what happened in Shushan. In Shushan, they killed on the second day 300. On the first day, they killed 500. Right, that's what it says. The first day, they brought the tally to Achashverosh, and they said they killed 500 people were killed. Bashar Medinas HaMelech Me'asa, who knows what happened out in the... We are now finally getting the information, what they did, Bashar Medinas HaMelech Me'asa, here, all the way later on. It's a little bit bizarre, the Pesukim here are out of order. If you want to say a chiddush, I don't know if you can say anything.
It was written over time, it didn't happen.
No,
the Megillah wasn't written right away. I mean, it took a long time to write it.
They didn't have the number until the next day. They didn't know about the 75,000.
Okay, all right, okay. But if you want to say, you can say a radical pshat is that this pasuk is telling us what they did on the 14th day in Bisham illegally. And I mean, if you want to go learn, the first interpretation of the Targum, they weren't really allowed to do anything on the first day, on the 14th day. According to the Targum's first interpretation, Esther's request was: the war is over, day 13 has come to pass. We want to make a public holiday on day 14. Nothing to do about war. We had nothing, and all of a sudden, the pasuk says they wiped out another 300 people. Where did that come from? They were renegades. They were vigilantes.
They could have been attacked.
Vigilantes. Doesn't say, okay, maybe they were vigilantes. And now if you want to continue in that line of thought, you can say that on the 14th, I think it really fits well, according to the Targum, that in Bashar Medina Samelech, on the 14th day, they were also vigilantes on a large scale, and they took out 75,000 people. It's not the Pashup Shat. Targum, but that you know the words fit. The moral nafsham nechmei behem harayv sinuch solutsiv. The Targum says the zavu shoy yudin di bifilchei de malka iskanashu. Targum pasuk tezayin the kaimu yos nafsham, they stood for their lives. The ashkochu niyocha, and they found peace, rest. Mibale divo vehon ukitolu besan ehom, they killed their enemies. Shavin vechamsha alfin mid beis amolek, like we mentioned before, they were specifically from the beis amolek. Uva'ado'o lo oshitu yosi, they only did not take their possessions. Ushlolom lo sholchu es vabizil lo sholchu es yidam. Pasuk Yud Zayin. B'yoyim shloishoso l'chodesh Adar. When did all of these things take place? Now we're dealing similarly with the Ori HaPerazos, people outside of Shushan, on the 13th day l'chodesh Adar, v'noach, and they rested b'arbo osarbo, on the 14th day, v'oso oso. That's a hard word in the Megillah. You catch the Balkari on this. Sometimes they make a mistake and it's mamish, mamish, ma'akiv. It's not v'oso. It's v'oso. The first time I lay in the Megillah, I must have said v'oso. I must have said v'oso. And then no one corrected me. And then afterwards, there was a Ben Tari came over and he said to me, tell me, did you say v'oso or v'oso? So I didn't. I was probably like 14 years old. I didn't know what to say. I don't know. Whatever. I don't know. So it sounded like you said ve'osa. So I said I don't know. So I don't. Whatever. I don't think he leaned over the Megillah, but he probably should have. Eschatoai ani maskir hayom.
Don't feel bad.
What?
Don't feel bad. There's two mistakes that I made for years, and nobody ever corrected me until my son was listening way back when my kids were old enough to listen to me going over the laning. And Moshe said to me, what'd you say? And I said,
what was the word?
He said, it was by the Shemini, by one of the animals.
Oh, and Tyra. Tyra is not so bad.
Yeah,
McGill.
Not so bad.
McGill is a whole different league, all right. Now, what is the difference between the word ve'oso verse ve'asa, or really the correct word we would expect ve'asu? Asa is the past. They didn't need it in the past. Vasa is the past. Now you can't say did in the past because we're talking about the present. It's telling us what's taking place. It should say that ve'asu. Ve'asu would be the correct grammatical expression for this word, but it does not say that. It says ve'asu. So what is the word ve'asu? It means they established for all time. It's an establishment that this is going to be the halacha for all generations. We're going to observe this day forever as a holiday. This is one of the most important words in the Megillah, because that's why we have the Megillah today. Why do we have the Yom? Why do we have the Yom Kippur Mizman Hazeh? Because of this word. They are so, because the people living at that time on their own established. The word also means to establish, also, this day, day 14, the day when they had relief from their enemy, Yom Mishteh V'Simcha, a day of Mishteh V'Simcha. Now let's see, there's no Rashi. Okay, let's first see the Targum, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Beyond plus asrei liyer chador on the 13th day of the month of Adar, hava kaviketol bizaris da amolek. They killed the zera shel amolek. Does not say that exactly in the pasuk. All it says is, it says, doesn't say anything in the pasuk. Just 13th day of Adar, and it says here he is, and they killed the zera amolek. Uniyacha hava liyisrael. There was rest for the Jewish people. Be arba asar bei. Umevad yosei yom. They made it. They are so. They made as a yom mishteh v'simcha. Now, if we look, you know, we'll leave that. There's an idea of why it says first mishteh before the word simcha. Let's discuss it. Now, if we just jump ahead for a moment, the pasuk yud tes. In yud tes, it says al kein hayudim habrozim hayoshim yori haprozos osim esyom habrozos l'chodesh adar simcha u'mishteh yom tov. Three things. So we're going to get to that pasuk in a moment, but that pasuk basically is describing what happened at that time, at the moment, live from the scene, right? Live from New York. This is the scene, right? What's going? This is what's happening. It's describing that they made it. It was a day of simcha, mishteh v'yom tov. There are three words. There are three different expressions. But before we get to Yom Tov, it says first there was simcha, and then there's mishteh. But here in Pasuk Yitzayin, it says that when they established the day, they established it as a yom mishteh v'simcha. Should it not be consistent? Should it not say in both places simcha u'mishteh, u'mishteh v'simcha? So the answer is very simple. At the time, they were naturally happy. The happiness was not artificial. They just escaped with their lives. So it was a natural happiness. So the natural happiness required celebration. So l'chaim, they brought out there was simcha. There was natural happiness, and you brought out the wine, the food, and now you have mishte and you have a party. But for all generations, it's not a natural happiness. You forget very quickly. I don't even remember what happened yesterday. Good news that it's yesterday's news. Everything comes and goes. So then it comes a year later, it comes now. It's now Purim. Do you even know it's Purim? If not for the fact that in the newspapers and on shul and from all of your friends, everyone is talking about making Purim. You don't even know it's Purim. It's a day on the calendar. There's no natural simcha. In order, you have to do things to stimulate yourself to come l'day simcha. When the miracle actually happens and you come out alive, then you're besimcha, you're naturally besimcha. But when nothing is going on, the world, Baruch Hashem, is peaceful. And everyone is leaving you alone. You can live a normal life. And now on the calendar, oh, guess what today is? Who knows your Yahrzeit is today? It's this one, that one. I didn't even know this one. Who's this person? What did he do? Tell me about him. What was his accomplishments? How does it affect me? It takes a lot of work to stimulate your neshama to feel the significance of the day. How do you do that? Good liquor. you need some stimulants. You have mishta, and the mishta is what brings liday simcha. So that's why here, when it says in this pasuk gezayin that it was a day that was established to be a holiday, first you'll drink a little bit l'chaim, it'll loosen you up, stimulate you, and you'll be able to reach the madrega of simcha. But b'shas ma'is, I don't need any stimulation. I'm naturally happy, so therefore it's mishta, it's simcha, and then it's mishta. Second idea comparison is when they originally, on the day when it actually happened, on day 14, it was a yom tov. The word yom tov in Tanakh is not a light expression. It means there was an isra malacha. That's really what it means. It means that the war was on day 13, and they succeeded, and they sent out a text to the entire Klal Yisrael. Day 14,
stop texting.
No half yom tov. Day 14 is a yom tov, light candles the night before, night candles, issur melacha. All business is closed. It was a full fledged yom tov. No, killing was already over. Killing was over on 13. So, but for all future generations, they saw, now this is a different interpretations, they saw it's too much. It's too much to decree for all future generations, Yom Tov, where you can't do Malacha. So they did not go that far. When they did it, the Oso, Yom Mishta V'Simcha, they only made two things. It's Mishta V'Simcha, you don't say Tachman, and you don't, what other things are you not allowed to do on Purim? Whatever, today you mishta v'simcha, you don't fast, no hespedim, no hespedim, all of the restrictions of avelus are lifted, even though you know, some hold that an avel, even within Shiva, does not sit Shiva.
Really?
On, there are different opinions, a big machlokes apayiskim, on Purim, you can go to shul, to hear the Megillah. You don't have to lay it at home. Even if you can lay it at home, you don't have to. You can go to shul. You can do whatever you want. There's no sitting shiva on Purim according to some because it's called a yom simcha. He did sit shiva. Yeah, and he sat shiva. They were still the Eretz Yisrael. Yeah.
Okay.
Whatever it is, a different sheet. So it's a yom, they were not mekabel upon themselves the chumr of not doing malacha. Now some say it's because it was too difficult, it was too hard, so it's more of a negative, it's more of a chesaron in Klal Yisrael, they were a disappointment. You see this again, this was meant to be Mashiach. You have to understand, you have to look at the Megillah in an entirely different light. It's a bittersweet holiday. Mashiach was in our hands. And we let it slip away. So it's a disappointment. It was a day of Yom Mishta. It was a day of Simcha Mishta V'Yom Tov. But because we let it slip away, we don't perpetuate the memory of Purim with Yom Tov. That's a negative spin on why it's missing. Some say no, it was by design. Since the entire miracle was a miracle that was wrapped up in Teva, was wrapped up in natural occurrences, so when we commemorate the miracle for all generations, it also has to be a Yom Tov where you're allowed to do Malacha. You're allowed. and within make a holiday out of a day where you can do malacha. You get in your car and you drive to give Mashalach Manos and you have a band, and basically that's really what we do. We make use of every type of malacha that is available that you can do on Purim and use that to enhance the simcha, because that's really what the Yom Tov of Purim is all about. It's not a Yom Tov that commemorates the thing that happened in Malam Derech HaTeva. It's a Yom Tov which commemorates the Hashkocha Pratis in the natural way the world goes about. So Adrabah, do malacha, and the malacha on this day should be a malacha which enables you to do misameach in what happened. And that's how you're able to do Mishloach Manos Ish L'Re'ehu. You can't give money Matanis L'Avyonim. You can't give money is Muksa. The Anim, they're going to get money, they're going to go to the store, they're going to buy food. All of these things cannot possibly be done if there's going to be a Yom Yisrael Malacha. So some of the commentators interpret this in a very positive spin. Adaraba, it is bedavka by design was not meant to be a Yom Tov in order to celebrate the holiday in a different surah from the other chagim that we celebrate.
What happened to Soson?
Soson, Laihudim Oysa Oira Vesimcha Vesoson Vikar. It's a good point. I don't know what happened to the Oira, Soson Vesimcha. Okay, I don't know. There's a different expression. Okay, so this is the day that he has now. Here's another very interesting question. So who's the one that established this day as a holiday? This is a very tough question. Normally, Takonis and Klal Yishol come from the top. They're Anshe Knesset Agdola, Mordechai Nevi'im. You don't have Takonis Halachos that are instituted by the common man. Take a vote. They sent out they have certain websites where you can put up a petition, right? Anyone put up a petition, you send out the link, everyone votes, and it catches on, it goes viral, and you have a million votes deciding. That's not the way it works. People don't have the right. The average Chaim Shmerl doesn't have the right all of a sudden. You know, let's make a Yom Tov. It has to be come from the top down. Here it's very clear. The Oso, it says that the people made it. The connotation is the people made it. So this is indeed another unique feature of Purim. It's a holiday that came from the Haskomas Ha'om, from Klal Yisrael. It wasn't necessary for Mordechai to come and to... Mordechai just had a rubber stamp. It wasn't top down. It was from the bottom up. It's a very unique feature. Now, how does that come to be? So one of the ideas, he develops this idea... What? That's not hapachus to say that people... But one of the ideas that he develops here at Lent in the Mishmasai Zav is, let me introduce it with the Vart, a very popular question, and he has a very good answer to the question. Ilu kervanu lifnei har Sinai v'loi nosan lanu es haTorah dayenu. If Hashem would have brought us to har Sinai, would not have given us the Torah, it would have been good enough. What? The whole purpose of coming to Har Sinai is a very famous question. You've all heard this question. If the whole purpose of coming to Har Sinai is to get the Torah. So what's the common answer? The common answer is Achdus. That's the answer you hear a lot. By coming to Har Sinai, just that Klal Yisrael should have a meet of Achdus, that's Kedai, forget about the Torah. It's even more important than the Torah. Halavai, we should just have Achdus. More important, but Halavai, we should just have Achdus. That's a very... Okay, that's a bigger nace for sure. Okay, that's a very common answer. But he has something much deeper, much more profound in the Mishmas Hazav. I'm not sure who he's quoting this from. Let's go back to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu and all the Avos and the Shvatim Chazal tell us we're mekayim the Torah ad shaloi nitna, before it was given. Avraham Avinu, even Erev Tuchumin, the Tilas Yadayim. I mean, they were Mekayim, all of the Minhagim that we do today, Chazal tell us, you have to realize the others already knew about it. What are you talking about? There was Netilas Yadayim, Eruvei Techumin, Eruvei Chatzeros. What are you talking about? The answer is, you don't understand. These people were on such a high spiritual level. Their sensitivity was such, they can detect in their neshama that this is what Hashem wants from a person. The Torah was given because formally because 99.9% of the population doesn't have access, doesn't have that sensitivity to know what Hashem wants you to do. So Hashem, I'll have to give you an instruction book, a guidebook, and this is what you're supposed to do. But if you were spiritually sensitive, you can right away understand you don't eat an animal until you do shechita. It's just a certain sensitivity. You don't eat ever menachai. Animal's alive, you have to slaughter the animal, and you'll figure out that the most proper way to take the life of the animal is to shechita. A sensitive person understands that there's something called Shabbos. There's a day of rest. Hashem created the world on 7 days, and it goes on and on. Avraham Avinu's spirituality was on such an exalted level, his sensitivity was such that he was able to detect the Ratzon Hashem, Kol HaTarakula, down to the little details. So that's what it means. Ilu kervanu lifnei har Sinai v'loi nosan lanu es HaTorah, Klal Yisrael at that moment achieved such an exalted degree of spirituality, they naturally knew what the Torah was.
That raises the level of Ayishmar Mishmar Pinus, Vosai Kuposai Visor Osai by Abraham. So
he already knew everything. He understood.
God is saying, as a Shabbat, he did it before we gave it.
When Klal Yisrael came to Har Sinai, they reached that Madrega through all the miracles that happened in the desert, the Mon, the Anani HaKavot, the Be'er, the Achdus that they achieved. They were spiritually sensitive. They already understood what Hashem wants from them. It wasn't necessary for Hashem to give them the Torah. They already understood what was required of them, what the mitzvot of the Torah was. The giving of the Torah was just a formality. It was nothing more than a formality, or maybe you can say, Gadol mitzvah v'yoseh, v'mishayna mitzvah v'yoseh. But it was already a Kabbalah Satorah before they got it. Just coming to Har Sinai, that was already enough. What is the miracle of Purim? Chazal over and over tell us, Kimu v'kiblu, Kimu mashe kiblu kvar. The miracle of Purim mimicked Kabbalah Satorah. In fact, it was better. Kabbalah Satar, they were forced. Kaf alem har kegigis. But by the miracle of the avas anes, due to the love of the miracle, the recognition that Kadosh Baruch Hu was with Klal Yisrael, they will makabel the Torah a second time with even a greater commitment. It was even greater. Kimu v'kimu mashakim lukvar. Therefore, when it says here ve'oso oso, when the people did the umakabel Purim, it wasn't necessary for Mordechai to. I have an idea. Let's now mikanel abal. Let's have a miracle of Purim. It was natural, just like the entire Torah was natural to Klal Yisrael when they reached Har Sinai because of the achdus of what they have achieved at that moment. It was natural to Klal Yisrael that there has to be a holiday to be commemorated every single year in the way it's celebrated. It wasn't needed. It wasn't like they were ignorant or they were insensitive to the spirituality of the day. It was a natural thing, and that's what it says over here. V'yoso basically is mimicking. You can substitute these words: ilu kervanu lifnei har Sinai v'loy nosan lanu es haTorah dayenu. We already knew what to do. I didn't need a Moshe Rabbeinu to come and tell us this is the mitzvah. It's a formality. Mordechai also gave a rubber stamp on it, but it was a formality. It was v'yoso oso. That's how the Mishmitzah Zal. I think it's a very powerful, very beautiful development to what he says to explain Bshan this pasuk. Okay, now let's go to pasuk, the next pasuk. Wait, let's see. We did over here this pasuk. Bishop simply, Vayudim Asher B'Shushan. Next pasuk is Yudches. The Hayudim Asher B'Shushan. The Yehudim Asher B'Shushan. Nikalu, they assembled. B'Shloisha Osarbo on the 13th day. Uve Arbo Osarbo, and on the 14th day they went to war 2 days. The Noach, they rested. Bachamisha Osarbo on the 15th day, and therefore it was natural for the people in Shushan HaBir to establish a holiday, not the 14th but the 15th day. The Oso Yom Mishteh V'Simcha, the same thing. They established a 15 forever to be a holiday. The Targum Pasuk Yudches V'Hudo Indi B'Shushan for salvation. Now notice in Pasuk Yud Ches, the Targum adds the word L'Sheit Tzah, whereas in Pasuk Yud Zayin he does not add that word. which is something very telling, because it's almost exactly the same words. It's exactly the same thing, exactly the same expression, but only does it say over here, which means salvation, Yeshua. Does it say that with regard to the people in Shushan HaBira? Yos bino da Amalek, from the salvation from the children of Amalek, betlas asar be on the 13th day. So he's also focusing specifically on the children. Uvarba asar be on the 14th day, and on the 14th day, v'nochu bach hamsho asar be. Umebad yosed they made this day yom mishtayov v'chedva, a day of mishte v'simcha. Okay, the same two words he had in Pasuk Yud Zayin. Now, why do we emphasize salvation from the Amalek? I do not know, but it's an interesting point to take note of. Pasuk Yud Tes. Okay, now we finally get back to some Rashi. Pasuk Yud Tes Al Kain, therefore, after we make this full assessment, Hayudim, the Yehudim. Okay, it goes, before we go further, Pasuk Yud Tes, I don't know what the significance is, again, Vahayuhudiyim. Again, we have the two Yuds. In Pasuk Yud Tes. And then the prazim, yeah. So why the okay? Every kri v'chsif has a reason. There's a drasha. We have a kabbalah that is a drasha. Unless you want to say it was just a spelling mistake that occurred over the years, which some do indeed say. Okay, that's not to be ignored, because the megillah from all of the sifrei Tanakh is the one that is most questionable. Some few of the words, and that's one of the reasons why we read over a few psukim. There are a few psukim that we actually. Well, some want to say this. I mean, some say this in exact. You know, there are a lot of things. The exact number of words. Kodesh.
There were people writing it.
Okay, so there are questions. There are questions that the Mincha Shaya. Okay, I don't have to use.
Let's say Lashon Kodesh or in Persian.
It seems Lashon Kodesh.
Because they send the Ksav to Al Medina.
They translated it. Yeah, they translated it. Yeah. Okay, it's also this Hashem's name does not appear in the Megillah openly because it was included in the documents, in the secular documents of the king of Persia. All right, some of these things are mysteries. The Mincha Shai, you know, the Mincha Shai is a sefer. It's a very old sefer. He was very big medaktik, very bucky in grammar and in the Mesor. What?
I think it's out of print already.
Mincha Shai, no, they would put
it
in the new.
I know what I mean. They used to have it with other spawn.
In the Tikkun Simonim. And the Tikkun, they have the whole thing. They have the whole Mincha Shai in Tikkun Simonim from beginning to end.
They used to have it alongside.
Yeah, in the new mikros, they don't have it. Some of them, it depends. But it's very, very accessible. So he has different gears. A lot of the words at the end, normally in Chumash, we always follow the Mincha Shai. Whenever there's a shayla in Tanakh, Nevi'im and Ksuvim, the Chumash is not really so much of a shayla, but any time there's a shayla, generally the haskam is to follow the Mincha Shai. Yet in the Megillah we don't. The Mincha Shai, I don't know what they are. There are a few words the Mincha Shai says different than what we say, what's common among us. And for whatever reason, we have not corrected the Megillahs to follow the Messiah of the Mincha Shai. It was a very great loss of the Aleppo Codex. The Aleppo Codex, according to some, is the most authoritative version of Tanakh. Some assume that this was the Tanakh that the Rambam referred to in his Yad HaZakah, that he wrote his own Sefer Torah. He used them in the Aleppo Codex, and in 1948, unfortunately, it went missing. The Megillas Esther portion of the Codex and the Chamishei Chumshei Torah. Everything else survived. So I mean, and it would be, is there interesting to what did it say? It could be they do know what it said. There are experts in the Aleppo Codex. It could be they do know what it said in the Aleppo Codex, and I think what they do know is not the way we have it in our common Megillus. There are a few spellings and a few words which may be a little bit different. I don't know for sure. All right, but even over here, I don't know why, but just the point, the Pasuk Yud Ches says, V'hayuhudiyim asher b'shushan nekalu b'shloish asabo. So again, we always discuss, whenever it's V'hayuhudiyim, the Kri V'chsev, the general interpretation is individuals, renegades, yechidim, not representing the entire Klal Yisrael. So that would be interesting, that Shushan, the miracle in Shushan Abir, is in one respect being viewed as, at least the Ksiv, the way it's spelled, is a holiday for individuals. It could be, Mayor, you mentioned this last week, is that there is such a concept of your own Purim. That a person experiences a miracle in his life, the custom is on that day when you experience a miracle, you celebrate that as your own Purim. This is my Purim. A miracle happened to me on this day. You see a makar for that right here in this pasuk. There was a miracle for the vast majority of Klal Yisrael. The vast majority of Klal Yisrael celebrated, they survived on day 13, and they rested on day 14. Shushan HaBir was a teeny segment of Klal Yisrael. It was the capital, it was where indeed the sin of the eight from the Suda Sachashverosh, it was the center of activity, but they were still individuals. And when they added another day to go to war through Esther, that was to some degree not necessarily representing the entire Klal Yisrael. And that's maybe why it says here, Lisa al derech tushve hayehudiyim, as individuals. And that would mean just like we find legitimate acceptance of this individual holiday for those individuals, so to any individual in their lifetime that experiences something that he senses to be unusual, a special hashkacha pratis, you also have an obligation to celebrate that day as your private holiday. Now, how far you go, that's another story. You don't go, what do you do exactly, but it's something to take note of on that calendar day. Hashem has done for you a miracle. Okay, so over here we have Pasuk Yudches, Yudches says, Pasuk Yutes, put Yutes, Lakein, therefore, Hayehudim. Okay, again, we're back to the full spelling. Hayehudim, the nation, Haprazim, that live in open walled cities. Yeah. Okay, undefended cities. Now, it does not say, notice it's spelled over here. I do not know why Haperuzim. There is an extra Vav. Okay, I do not know why. There is must be some interpretation, but we read it as a komatz. Haperuzim, but we read it as haperozim, as a komatz. Haperozim. The emphasis is on the Zion, but as a komatz, hayoshim, that live the Arei Haperozos, that live in the unwalled cities. Osim, they celebrate. Eis yom arba sar. I'm sorry, this recurs to what happened on the day. Okay, so we're going back in time. Alkein therefore, hayehudim. We're going back and forth. Alkein hayudim haparazim hayoshim biyor haparazos osim. Eis yom arba asar l'chodesh adar simcha u'mishtevi yom tov u'mishloch monos ish l'reyehu. So, okay, let's see what's in the Rashi. More clarification. It seems to say what they're going to do in all generations, but that's not how Chazal interpret. Chazal interpret this passage in reference to what they did on that year, on that particular year. Rashi haper razim she'enam yoshim bi'arei chayma bi'arba asar u'mukafim chayma b'tesav keshushan v'hekiv zetzach she'yeh mimos Yeshua b'nun kachdar shuv olamdu rabaseinu. So here we come over here, we give two major yesodas, two new yesodas into the miracle of Purim. That Shushan Purim was meant to be celebrated in Shushan, and any city in the world that had a wall, Miyamos Yehoshua bin Nun. What does Yehoshua bin Nun have to do with the miracle of Purim? So the answer is, simply, we're coming to give kavod to Yerushalayim. Im tidbak l'shoinei lichiki, what was the pasuk? Im eskerechi Od im lo yale im ales Yerushalayim al roish simchasi. At the time of any simcha, you have an obligation to remember Yerushalayim. Purim is such a simcha; it's like one big wedding, and therefore the halacha demands that tidbak l'shon l'chiki. You must give kavod to Yerushalayim. And the way the miracle was structured, the celebration for all generations to structure is, it has to be any city that had a wall from the time of Yeshua ben Nun when they came in to conquer Eretz Yisrael, even though it has nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael. The miracle of Purim took place in Kutz Liaretz. The miracle of Purim took place during a time when there was no Beis HaMikdash. It all centers around the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, at Chatzia Malchus, Vitzinosin Loch, but every year when we celebrate, we have a special day, Shushan Purim, and the Shushan Purim is defined by Yerushalayim. There was a wall around Yerushalayim from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. It was a city when they came into Eretz Yisrael to give cover to Eretz Yisrael. Now, another point is, why do we focus specifically on Yehoshua? So simply because that's when Klal Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael. But on a deeper level, we're comparing we're comparing Matan Torah to Purim. What was, who was the Yom Tov of Shavuos? Whose Yom Tov is Matan Torah? Whose Yom Tov is the Yom Tov of Shavuos? It's Moshe. Hey, David's your side, but Simchas Torah. Who gave us the Torah? Moshe Rabbeinu. It's Torah's Moshe. Who was the one that went to Shemaim 40 days, 40 nights? Who's the one that gave the Torah to Klal Yisrael? Moshe Rabbeinu. And what is the Yom Tov? What is the Yom Tov of Purim about? Shushan Purim. It's about walled cities, Miyamos, Yehoshua bin Nun. Why? Because Yehoshua is the Talmud. Moshe is the Rebbe. Kimu v'kiblu. Kimu ma'ashe kiblu kvar. Moshe gave us the Torah the first time, and the Talmud, now it wasn't Yehoshua in this instance, but Yehoshua represents the quintessential Talmud. It's a Yom Tov of Talmidim. There's a Yom Tov of the Rebbeim, and there's a Yom Tov of Talmidim. Shavuos is a Yom Tov of the Rebbeim. Purim is the Yom Tov of the Talmidim. And why? Because the Talmidim represent Torah Shebaal Peh. You can add, the giving of the Torah, it's wonderful. You can give or you can speak. But if there's no one listening, then what's it all worth? You need someone to listen. You need someone to be a Makabel. When there's a Makabel, that completes the unit, that acknowledges that there indeed is a Mesorah, there is Torah Shebaal Peh. The Yom Tov of Purim was the Kabbalah of Torah Shebaal Peh. Kimu, Nasev Nishma was what? Was on Torah Shebaal Chsav. And that was, they accepted it willingly. But Kof Aleim Har Kigigis was on Torah Shebaal Peh. But Purim, they were makabel Torah Shebaal Peh b'rotzon. They said, "Nasev nishma Torah Shebaal Peh." Torah Shebaal Peh is only a Torah Shebaal Peh. There's someone to be makabel it. The whole Kabbalah, Torah Shebaal Chsav. I don't need a Kabbalah. Go look it up. Go to the library and go look it up. You'll see what it says in the book. It's written down. Shebaal Peh, the Mesorah, is the Talmidim. We have the Mesorah. We go down to the next generation. Therefore, the essence of Purim is a Yom Tov of Talmidim, not of the Rabbeim. And that can take on a whole new dimension in the Olam of Machshav and Drush when you look at that point, and it comes from here, these two Yisoidais, to give cover to Eretz Yisrael, Imloy Ales Yerushalayim Al Rosh Simchasi, and to give recognition to the Koyach of Talmidim.
I think the Zichei Chachamim mentions that the reason for the cross and the decree of Ksiv is to teach you that you might think that Mimos Yehoshua, that we know it's Mimos Yehoshua Benon, but this is the decree of Ksiv, because otherwise you might think that it's from the time of Shushan Abira, from the time of Purim, that's when it has to be Mukefes Choma.
Right, so how does that tie into the...
Well, he says it's written with a yud. I mean, we read it with a yud to teach you that the Gemara makes it Zeri Shava, blah, blah, blah. He says...
It's spelled deliberately incorrectly to awaken you that that's...
from the time of the story of Purim. It's still Mimos Yehoshua Benun, because otherwise you might think from now. But it's not from now. It goes back.
Okay, let's finish up the words of Mishloach Mona. Shame Davar. Mishloach means shame. Kamo Mishamer Mashma Lefiha Hashin Nikuda Rafui. Okay, it's a Mishloach Monos to send gifts. A Mishloach.
It's not Mishloach. It's
Mishloach. So what would it mean? What would it mean?
Mishloach means from sending.
From not to send. Not to send.
Not a noun form.
He's saying it is a noun form. Shem Dover. Shem Dover means...
Yeah, that's what he's saying, but you might think otherwise.
If you would have read it, Mishaloach, it wouldn't be a noun form.
It would be a noun. What would it mean? Then it would mean that you should not send. Or Mishaloach Manos, that you should not send Manos Ishlevayehu. That would be nonsense. Therefore, Mishaloach means you should send. It's a day when the essence of the day is a day of sending. A day when you send gifts Manos Ishlevayehu. And notice here, it does not say over here Matanos Loevionim. This becomes later on in the Perek, the Matanosim. Can I one, let's just see the Targum, we'll finish up. Pasig Yotes in the Targum. Begin came because of this. Yehudoin in the open walled cities, the Yudin, the Yasvin, the Kirve Patsichaya, who sit in live in open walled cities. Avdin Yasiyom Arbasaler Khadar, Khedvasa Mashkaya, the Yomatov, the three things. And according to Chazal, this alludes to what took place on that year. Even though the Pasuk of a year seems to say the simple reading is that they are going to do this for all future generations, we interpret it also in reference to what happened the first year. Umeshadrin Doiron Givar Lechavrei, one man to his fellow. We discussed this last year. Why does it say Ish Lirei Ehu? So I told you last year there's a very big debate. What is the purpose of Mishloach Manos? You have limited time on Purim. You have very limited time. How much time, how many Mishloach Manos can you really go around sending? I know some people, they make a big deal about it. They go and they get in their car and their kids and they pack up $1,000 worth of Mishloach Manos and they go to every person they know and they haven't met their whole life. They go to everyone on the block and they don't know, and they make their rounds. Some people, you'd say, give one person two things, you go to your next door neighbor, and you're done. Other people are somewhere in the middle. Who should you focus on? Should you focus on giving Mishloach Manos to people that you see every single day in shul? Or should you focus on giving Mishloach Manos to people that your enemies? The people that... It's a day to mend fences. Today, it's a good day to mend fences, to go and
poison
Shalach Manos with secret messages. One was the Balabas, my father, Shuli, sent my father a very bizarre Shalach Manos. A very bizarre Shalach Manos. And like, really, what is this? So then he kept on coming back to my father. Did you understand the Shalach Manos? My father told him, "No, I don't. I don't get it. I don't understand. It was like in the shape of a certain whatever, whole crazy." So it took a very long time for him to finally explain the deep symbolism and the message. This very convoluted message he was trying to give. Okay, today. So the question over here is, what today the theme is going to be? Trump. See, you're going to see that's going to be the big Mishloach Manos. Trump. Trumpets. All right. But the question over here is, who should you focus on? Should you focus on sending Mishloach Manos to people that you know you try to distance, or should you try to send Mishloach Manos to the people that you deal with on a daily basis? So some argue, Purim, the Mishloach Manos is to reinforce. Don't take your friends for granted. So, I don't my friends, I don't need to send my next door neighbor Mishloach Manos. I'll send Mishloach Manos, I'll go to people that know far away, long lost relatives. Okay, some have that attitude, but some, the Iker Mishloach Manos are to give to the people that you see every single day, your closest friends, because the message is, don't take your friends for granted. You have people who have a tendency, my friends, I take them for granted. They're here, there. Let me use this day as an opportunity to conquer greener pastures. Let me go out and go and expand my horizons. Okay, well, imperialism. We'll go out into the world, we'll conquer new continents, new countries. That's not what it's about. Purim is don't take your friends for granted. You sit with the person, you see them every single day in shul, this, that. Ish lirei'ehu. The emphasis, lirei'ehu, not people more at a distance. All right, let's stop over here.